Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. My name is Ilan Haimov. I'm a partner at Greenhouse & Jenks, where I lead the Film and Television Profit Participation Water Group. I wanted to welcome a couple of speakers today. I have Randy Wah, the Senior Vice President in the Entertainment Industries Group at Bank of America. Welcome, Randy.
Hi, Ilan. How are you?
Thank you. Randy, you're responsible for restructuring and managing complex entertainment-related credit facilities. And in addition to Randy, we have Chris Spicer, partner and head of the entertainment and media practice of Akin Gump. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you both. Just really quickly, Chris advises his clients in the financing, distribution, and production of film, television, and digital media projects in the United States, Southeast Asia, as well as the Middle East. What our theme and focus of our podcast today will be on the current production challenges from a financing and legal standpoint. Randy obviously brings in the financing background, and Chris brings in the legal background, and it's wonderful to have you both today. I wanted to go ahead and start with you, Chris. What I'm hoping you can do is if you can share key challenges, whether they're legal, insurance, or other, that production companies, your clients, face during this prolonged and evolving public health crisis. And also, if you can share some of the key things companies should be thinking about right now in the short term is what they can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me, and look forward to this. So, you know, the key challenges when we're discussing kind of legal, financing, insurance, they all sort of blend together. And one of the things that I kind of like to talk about up front is, you know, despite what's going on with COVID in the world today, this really is, in terms of production of film and television, a temporary issue. I just say that in the sense that at some point the world will return to some semblance of normal. And, you know, in the meantime, whether that's for another day, month, year, 2 years, you know, producers of content just need to figure out how they can get their productions moving. So on that note, and also, as you could expect, the key, you know, the legal and the insurance and the financing all kind of blends together. And really for production companies right now, and when we can talk about production companies, if it's okay with, you know, you and Randy, I'll talk about everyone from, you know, right, Amazon all the way down to a, you know, small one-off indie producer, because that's really kind of who you're talking about in the layers there. Insurance being a key issue kind of no matter what your budget is. And I sort of like to split it up into kind of three categories of film, because it sort of helps film, television, whatever you want to call it. There's small budget, middle budget, large budgets, right? So, and again, with the legal sort of revolves around the insurance problem right now. Real briefly, the issue with insurance is it is impossible slash very, very difficult to get a COVID coverage under an insurance policy or a completion bond or any other typical mechanism for protection in the production of a show or film. That's whether, so just again, using a large streaming company or major studio, if they're kind of looking and making their analysis to get projects going and weighing whether they, you know, can take some risk to that COVID exclusion and versus kind of how, you know, profitable or how much they need to get whatever particular film or television show going. Moving. Small budget films kind of is a completely different scenario. The small budget, you know, if you can do a film for $5 million or under in a 20-day shoot, kind of in a contained universe, you're making decisions on kind of what insurance product you can buy, and you're kind of looking at the various insurance products that have sprung out there to kind of coverage you off on what we'll all call the COVID gap now. And then kind of mid-budget products kind of has some of the issues that the larger, huge $100 million studio projects have and some of the same issues that the smaller budget projects have. So in terms of legal what you can do to help your project going. And I mean, I like to use specific examples because, I think they're helpful. And look, the calculus for the studios and large producers is obviously different. So I'll kind of focus on more if you're a smaller, traditionally independent producer or production company. And the first thing you do is you need to be kind of creative and expect the worst, right? And if you can do that, and you just need to understand that legally, in forgetting your financing, you're just in a different world than you were in 6 months ago. And so there's going to be some additional cost. You're going to need to deal with additional procedures and processes for actually getting through physical production. And you're going to need to have a contingency plan that either your equity financier, your bank, whoever it is that's financing your project is going to get comfortable with. And that will likely, cost you some money to get that comfort level. And you need to be patient and look at all possible solutions for how to do it. One of the things that, we've tried to do with a few clients on sort of smaller projects is, when you talk about allocation of risk, Randy at Bank of America and that team is probably not going to take a massive production risk for, the interest rates that, senior institutional lenders typically charge for that type of product. So, you need to have a production plan in place that a kind of fund or private equity provider or high net worth individual who might be willing to take on more of the COVID risk for a slightly higher return can get comfortable with. And you need to have all of that kind of organized into something that looks like it's plausible that it could either A, kind of get through principal photography for whether it's a show or a film in a certain period of time. And, and B, if it doesn't, that you've got kind of at least enough kind of reserve or a backup plan or a, plan A, B, and C. And, look, I'll just leave it at that and kind of turn it back to you, Elon, on a, on a positive note. We've had clients that have done that, and it's difficult and it's hard to do, but, organization, kind of flexibility, ability to kind of think outside of the box on what you need, both in terms of your, your legal and your financing, and then just kind of trying to understand the insurance products out there. And that's kind of how you can get something made in today's challenging environment.
That's really helpful and very, very thorough. Chris, one quick follow-up question. Does the production location make any difference? I've seen instances where production is moving to places like New Zealand, like Korea, where there is generally more control over the spread of the virus, as opposed to obviously doing it here in the United States.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's absolutely something that's taken into account, right? And it's one of those where even when you're talking to insurers, whether they're using data analysis to measure the risk, absolutely. So one of the projects that we're working on right now, we're contemplating shooting it in Northern Europe in an area where, the COVID spread is, again, not an epidemiologist, but has moved in the quote right direction, for lack of a better term. And we're, scheduling out the week long, the weeks of the shoot. And because of where we're filming, kind of, we think the insurance products that we need to get will be, lower or even possible where they might not be possible in, certain states in the United States right now. And insurers and financiers are both looking at that. But at the same time, some of the places where people will go to the film, and that's kind of where the flexibility aspect comes in, is you could be filming in midway through, a 12-week shoot, and then sort of that country or state or wherever it is locks down again, and you kind of could be in the same place. But yeah, absolutely, where the shoot is going to occur is of high relevance now.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Switching to you, Randy. With Chris's general background as to what's going on right now and the additional costs production companies will have to incur, and with the overall public health crisis that we're all faced with, especially in our industry, what liquidity challenges do you hear from clients right now being faced with, again, with respect to ongoing operations as well as production lending standpoint?
Well, there's a couple of things to think about. So the last time we had a big challenge in the financing market was probably, the economic crisis in 2009 or so. And I would say the banks are a lot stronger nowadays than they were in 2009, where you actually saw a lot of banks either get acquired or, fall for bankruptcy. So that's changed quite a bit. So liquidity is challenging, but there's also government programs that help out. So I think most people by now know about PPP. And I think a lot of borrowers tapped into that. And for what we know, there's supposed to be a second round, so that's always helpful. But the market in general, when you look at it, existing productions that were going on pre-COVID, they're going to continue. The challenge has mostly been for banks to finance projects without insurance or bonding. And Chris kind of explained it pretty well earlier. As long as the insurance is there, banks are going to feel comfortable financing projects. And when you look at the ones that were pre-COVID, you're going to have the same policies. The challenge is actually financing the projects without insurance, post-COVID. And we haven't seen much of that so far. Those projects are really going to have to be financed through equity because banks aren't really in the place where they can underwrite, whether COVID lasts for 30, 60, 90 days and what happens if it lasts for 6 months. Those are the challenges facing the industry. I think in general, if you have a big credit facility and you need an amendment or there's liquidity challenges, banks have historically been pretty supportive of existing clients because, I mean, you've built the trust over the years and that's our business, right? We kind of adjust as things don't go along as planned. But I think going forward, that's effectively the challenge, right? When you look at how the market's developing, things move quickly. I mean, you think about theatrical, like what's going on with the theatrical market? If you're a domestic distributor and you're looking for financing for like a theatrical slate, what do banks do? Because there's not a lot of history of what goes on during a pandemic theatrically. So if you take those things aside, I think banks will generally be supportive. You might notice a little bit more conservative structures in the market and a little bit higher pricing, but it's not what we experienced during the economic crisis. I think by and large, people are fairly healthy at this point.
Thanks, Randy. I want to go back now to Chris, and I want you to pull out the crystal ball that you have in your office.
Got one in
And,
my home office and one in my work office.
there you go. Either one. And so, what we're hoping to see if you can share as best as you can, what long-term impact do you see to production financing deals the day after this pandemic is controlled? So probably this is now looking into deals that maybe are beginning to be discussed, the initial pre-planning discussions as we look to perhaps productions in perhaps the middle of next year.
Yeah, and it's a great question. And here's what I like to hear. I mean, we hear a lot about, over the last since COVID started here in the United States, is kind of the acceleration of trends in media that were already happening, right? It's no secret that, and again, I'm actually of the opinion that, people are going to start going back to movie theaters kind of as soon as they can. I mean, and personally, I really want to go see Tenet, so. I mean, I'm hoping that I can do that in a safe, safe environment soon. But, clearly there was a proliferation of streamers already happening, kind of migration from seeing everything theatrical, collapse of the window, kind of all that stuff was going on. And I sort of equate that to something similar was happening in the way production transactions were structured. In the sense that you had a traditional model, whether you were co-financing a slate of studio movies, traditional major studio movies, or kind of doing one-off projects here or there, deficit financing television, and with the proliferation of streamers, that's kind of that's already happened. And I think what COVID has done kind of has accelerated that. So, the day COVID is controlled or back kind of whatever it is, there's a vaccine. You know, the biggest thing I can say is sort of a one size fits all kind of approach to, you know, hey, I have this television show, this is how I get it made. Hey, I have this film, this is how I get it made, is gone. And I think people should take comfort in the fact that that's already it's already sort of started happening, right? The you know, when you're doing a project, you know, you just have to take into account what it looks like. Again, the film is the easier example, but if it's a film that's meant to go theatrical versus a film that, you know, may go theatrical if it turns out a certain way versus may go to a streamer, and you have to take that into account where, you know, whether you want to take the risk and, you know, potentially have a theatrical, you know, traditional window breakout versus, you know, get something to a streamer. And you know, people should understand, look, if Christopher Nolan or Quentin Tarantino are making films, those are going to be released theatrically, right? It's, you know, not everyone is, you know, has that sort of ability and, you know, or clout like the two of them do. And obviously everyone wants to see those movies theatrically. But again, just the production financing, I think that just takes into account when you're like at the planning stages of, you know, getting your project, whatever that may be, you know, off the ground. And if the market is not a streamer, then you know, you need to go one direction. And if it is a streamer, you need to go a different direction. And then within that, you know, that ecosystem, you need to know kind of, you know, everything you do. And it's sort of some people that are kind of smarter and more creative than I am that need to do it. But you know, there's a whole slew of kind of streamers based in Europe that aren't the, you know, the ones that the same exact product that we hear about here in the States. And I think that just all needs to be considered. But you know, if you take all that into account, I think there's a real opportunity moving forward.
Thank you, Chris. I'm wondering if there's going to be a requirement for more cash out up front from an investment perspective with some of these deals. But
Yeah, I mean, it's you're right. It's hard not to see that. Just, you know, based on, because I mean, look, the obvious kind of what we've seen in, you know, public deals where, you know, a film was kind of put together a certain way and then a streamer wanted it. It's hard, and Randy can speak to it. You know, it's hard to say, oh, I'm going to produce this movie and, you know, I'm just going to, worst case scenario, sell it to a streamer for, you know, 10 or 15% over the budget. You know, you can't just do that. So, you know, if you want to maintain some flexibility, yeah, it typically will require a larger equity investment. But again, the upside could be a lot bigger.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chris. Randy, just to continue that conversation, what key recommendations would you have for those folks who are in a position to make decisions, financial decisions specifically when it comes to those production financing deals that Chris spoke about earlier? What kinds of best practices or ideas you have for them as they think about these long-term deals in the future?
Yeah, I would say be flexible, right? I mean, I'm stating the obvious here, but be flexible, have a backup plan. You know, things change pretty quickly in this day and age. And you know, whether how fast you can turn on a dime, I mean, even when it comes to what we talked about earlier, where the production's actually going to be, you know, those things make a big difference because that could determine whether you're going to get financing or not. And I would tell people to think about whether to weigh certainty versus uncertainty. And right now there's just a lot of uncertainty in the market. So if you can get some certainty, either by raising funds early, you know, either through equity or your typical bank channels or even alternative debt, that's probably the way you want to go because we all hope that things get better. But you know, I don't think any of us in this room can say 3 months from now things are actually going to get better. I mean, it could get much worse, and you know, by then we don't know what the financing situation is going to look like. So I wouldn't necessarily wait for a better deal down the road. I think banking and financing generally follows the economy. So I just don't feel there's a lot of people that are bullish about the economy in the next, you know, short term, just based on the unemployment numbers that we're seeing. So, yeah, I would say certainly be flexible and kind of bird in hand is is probably the way I would think about it right now.
Thank you, Randy. And just to summarize, I really wanted to thank you both Chris and Randy, for joining us remotely. We actually had planned on doing this in person, but unfortunately, we couldn't do that under the current circumstances. But he was very helpful and very thoughtful. And again, I really appreciate your time. And I wanted to thank everyone who joined us and listened. So thank you all.